Hey everybody, I'm Dave Sandell.
And I'm Caleb Gardner.
And this is the Best Album For podcast, a podcast where we talk about the best album for spooky season. Caleb, it's Halloween. Everybody's getting their costumes on. My neighbors have really crazy decorations that I wouldn't want to live across the street from and wake up to every morning.
Yeah. I think I told you my 8-year-old is so into the Halloween decorations and wants to like add to it every single year. So by the time he goes to high school at this track, we will be that house that like everyone drives by and is like, whoa, they're very into it. He wants one of those 12-foot tall skeletons, you know, that people do.
Where do you store those? I've never understood. Do they break down and dismantle in like a helpful way?
I mean, I feel like you get trauma just from having to take apart the skeleton and store its arm and femur and skull in separate pieces.
There's a house near us that they go all out for Halloween. And my question is always like, where do you keep this stuff during the year? Do you just have a room in your basement that you walk into and there's just a horde of zombies sitting there at any given time?
Yep. It's got to be. Yeah.
My sons were out riding their bikes and they said, Dad, you have to go down this alleyway. I was like, I don't want to go down this alleyway. What's in this alleyway? It turns out they had been, you know, getting rid of some of their old decorations, but they're all these stand up zombies. And so if you go down their alleyway at night, there's no lights or anything. There's just a horde of zombies standing by their garage.
That's amazing.
And they slowly get lit up as you drive closer to them.
They had to have done that on purpose.
I assume so. I just wanted to be there the day that the garbage man pulled up and had to take these full-size zombies and put them in the garbage the garbage truck and watch them.
You don't
get
think somebody
smashed.
Came through the alley and said, "Oh, I have use of these. I could use some zombies."
Well, I think that's probably true, but can you have use for zombies?
Wait, so why did they get rid of the zombies? Did they upgrade? Was this an upgrade year? They actually got zombie 10 instead of zombie 9?
You know, they used to...
Zombie iOS 10?
They used to do a lot of homemade stuff. Like they would put a mask on a mannequin. Sure, and now they have like more proper,
as one does.
You know... Yeah, right. They have more proper Halloween decorations that you like buy at a store or whatever. It seems like their yard is getting more filled with like really expensive stuff, I assume. So these are like the old zombies that didn't look very good, you know, like, but they were fun, but they didn't look very good.
Yeah, got the new model. Got it.
Somebody told me that there's a house in Chicago that just keeps their life-size skeleton up year round. And it's placed in their backyard and it's taller than their house. And they just decorate it differently for different seasons. Sort of like have a Santa hat on or like Easter bunny ears or whatever, just depending
That's
on
amazing.
The season. I don't know if they get like a Hawaiian shirt and sunglasses in the summer or what, but apparently, you know, their giant skeleton that's taller than their house is just always there.
I love that. How do you define spooky season? That was my question about this topic. So are we just saying October? Is October now just like the entire thing is? Because I think I told you my kids had us put up the Halloween decorations on September 30th. They were like so anxious to get them up. So do we just count all of October is spooky?
Something that feels like it's changed in my lifetime in the last 10 years since I've had kids, maybe even, is that I feel like Halloween has crept more and more into the whole month. And people do put the decorations up on October 1st.
Yeah.
And decorations are out at Target in like, you know, July or something.
August. Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
And so I do now think of October as it's like fall and, you know, beautiful and crisp air. But there's also this like added thing of every other house has some weird witch in the front. That's part of the landscape of autumn now. Where does Halloween sit for you in your holiday rankings? Were you into Halloween a lot as a kid? Are you into it now?
Oh, yeah. I think I have much more of appreciation of how much I loved it as a kid, as an adult, if that makes sense. As a kid, I probably would have said Christmas was my favorite holiday just because of the gifts. You know, there's nothing can beat Christmas morning. It's just like the most fun. But now as an adult, you know, Christmas morning isn't as fun for me. And so it's like more stressful than anything, you know how it is. But Halloween, you know, seeing my kids dress up and get really into their characters and their costumes. And it's also like really fun in the neighborhood. You know, you see all the families out and you like talk to people. When we moved into our house about a year ago, Halloween was the first time we actually met our neighbors, because that was the only time that everyone was like out on the street. And so it's this fun, like communal thing too. I just think there's something really, really playful about it and fun. And, you know, though you don't get, it's like a singular experience you get as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
You can get into it as an adult, but you go through this period, I feel like, when you're a young adult of Halloween has to be cool and sexy and you're going to parties and it's so dumb. And then when you get into adult, like parenthood, you get back to that. Oh, this just gets to be silly and fun and playful again.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right. I was not that into Halloween as a kid. I liked it. Like it was, you know, it was fun getting dressed up, but I always found that experience really stressful. Like I didn't know what to be and everything. See, and back then I feel like your options were like make something at home or buy like a really crappy costume at Walmart.
Yes.
Like there was not a huge, like now you go to Spirit Halloween and you're, you know, you have a Costco sized building full of Halloween costumes. I've never actually been in a Spirit Halloween. This is just what I assume it is like in there based on the memes that I see online. But I never really knew what to be. And I was always, you know, kind of insecure kid. So I didn't necessarily want everybody looking at me. But one year I did get to be a vampire and I had like a full face paint and like blood and, you know, fake teeth and all that kind of stuff. And
I went as a vampire one year for sure.
Now, how do you do candy in your house? Do you let them just eat it as they want to? Do you make them dole it out over a year? What's your strategy?
So we have one celiac kid, so we can't just let them eat it. But beyond that, so we kind of like help them figure out what's safe to eat after they've collected everything, and that's a little
bit
of a chore.
Which ones don't have needles in them?
Yeah. Yes, needles and or gluten. They basically treat their body the same. So we do that, and then I think we let them kind of indulge to their heart's desire on the first night, because it's kind of like we know they're only going to go so far. They're tired anyway. It's fine. And then after that, we kind of let them have a few pieces a day, I think, basically.
Yeah.
While helping them out.
Yeah. Some of that has to disappear. They come home now with so much candy.
So
it is insane
much.
How much candy they have multiple tote bags filled with candy. And, you know, my kids are little tricksters, and so they go to the same house multiple times and all these other things.
Do you ever do the, like, Switch Witch or any of that, like, bartering candy for other things?
We used to, and they were always not very receptive to it.
Yeah, same. We tried it, and they were just like, nope, I want my candy.
We tried the you draft, like, 20 pieces, and then we donate the rest. I don't know who we donate it to. No food pantry needs 14 pounds of
you donate candy
M&Ms.
I love that.
Usually we donate it to the office kitchen area.
Yes.
Just to get it out of our house.
I've definitely done the thing where I've donated it to the adults in my office by just bringing a bunch of it back into work.
We definitely lock it all up though now. Like they get to have what they have their night of, and they eat so much candy while they're walking around that they definitely overindulge. It's really crazy. Yeah.
It's but it's like you let them overindulge that one time, right? Like that's kind of a fun thing about Halloween night.
My kids have an allergy to artificial dye.
Right.
Which
is
rough because everything has artificial dye in it at Halloween time. Like anything that's not chocolate has artificial dye, and they like chocolate. They want the like candy shell, sour candies, all that kind of stuff. So we have to be really careful about how we dole everything out. So we often will trade them like candy. There are candy makers that cost way too much money, but they you know, they make candy without artificial dye that still tastes like Skittles or whatever. So we will often trade them not those types of things, but. Do you do any kind of Switch?
No, they've really, I mean, similar to your kids, never been that receptive to it. We've tried to, but I think they just really like having that stash of candy. I mean, it lasts a long time.
It does. Yeah.
It's funny when you get to the point where like you're kind of at the dregs of the candy and the kids don't really want it anymore, but you're still going through it, seeing if there's things that you like, and you could tell like what they've rejected, and you're at the like off-brand things that no one really likes, but you're still eating it. It's a very sad time. It's like late November, early December at that point.
Yeah.
You're still finding the like last little bits of candy that are edible.
When we were creating this episode, there was sort of this question of, is spooky season scary or is spooky season playful? And, you know, there's kind of this whimsical, playful side of Halloween that we've been talking about. But I also really want to get into the actually kind of scary part of Halloween. There are all of these options now for entertainment where you can go to massive haunted houses where you can sign waivers and they'll like torture you People really go over the top with this stuff now. And I was curious where that stuff sits for you. I have a whole thing that I'll probably get into during my album pick, but I struggle with the like actually scary part of Halloween. But I do like scary movies, you know, some of them, not all of them. But I'm curious, like, where does all the actually quasi scary stuff land for you?
It doesn't land great. I mean, I'm not. So there's a couple things. One is what I've learned about my neurodivergence over the years is that there's actually a correlation between my ADHD and not liking loud, jumpy sounds. And that is something that has been true of me since I was a child. I remember there was this one, like, you know, you do those like questionnaires when you're in like third grade about things you like and don't like as fun as a class project. I literally remember writing in one of those loud noises was a thing I didn't like. I get freaked out by sudden loud sounds still to this day as an adult. My dog barking famously freaks me out, and the rest of the house is like, what's wrong with you, man? Like, they're not bothered by it at all, but he barks out of nowhere and I just like lose it. So that's part of it. Never been a fan of the jump scare. But in general, I think I'm thinking about this in movie terms, because how could you not? Like, the kind of horror jump scare kind of stuff, never been really into it. I do like the kind of like slow suspense thriller kind of movies, but they're not like a go-to genre. They have to be like really good quality and really good plot. Some of those Halloween movies are just literally just gore, and you know what I mean? They're just indulgent in horror. I don't really get into that kind of movie or experience. I'm not going to pay someone to pretend to do that to me. I don't know, which is the only thing I can assume you're paying for.
You've never done any kind of haunted house. I don't know what you call them. They're not haunted houses, but they're like.
Yeah. I did a couple haunted houses as a kid. You know, you kind of do it. Your friends like dare you to do it, and you kind of do it as a group. And, you know, there's some fun to that. But again, not really something I do on my own for fun ever.
I really love being scared as long as I'm with other people. I really don't like being scared by myself very often. Like, the idea of going through a haunted house by myself or even just with one other person sounds a little terrifying. But if I was with a big group, maybe I could take it. Maybe I could sit in the middle and not be chased by a person with a chainsaw. I might be able to do that. I generally like things that are a little creepy, a little spooky. I really love creatures, like any kind of creature movie I'm really into. But I switch off when it comes to gore or torture or body horror. Like, anytime you're like breaking bones and rearranging them.
Saw.
Like,
I'm out. So you're not into the Saw franchise?
I've never seen a Saw movie. I have no interest in ever seeing a Saw movie. They sound like they would be horrific and not pleasant.
That is horrific is part of their appeal. Yeah.
Yeah. I struggle with that whole phenomenon of like, I close my eyes at night and I see all the images and it's hard to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. That was me as a kid for sure. Like, I've got a couple famous incidents where my parents, I think honestly just to torture me, would watch scary movies with me. I think they only did this a couple times before they realized this is not a good idea. This is going to keep us up at night.
Yeah. One of my earliest memories, I had a babysitter who thought I was asleep. And the way that our house was, there was kind of this like, I don't know if you can picture this, but you can come down the stairs and you can kind of go through the living room or like the front family room and bypass the family room where the TV was and the kitchen. And you can kind of come out on the other side of it through the dining room. And then once you're in the dining room, you can see all the way into the living room. So the dining room looks into the kitchen and the kind of area where the TV is. And so I very quietly tiptoed my way almost like behind the couch, like without her noticing. And she was watching one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. And I was very young. I don't know how young exactly. I was very young. And I got so scared, but I didn't want her to know I was awake. And so I like very quietly tiptoed back upstairs. I like went into my parents' room. I hid under their covers and I grabbed the phone and I called the movie theater where I knew they were seeing a movie. And I said, you need to find John and Judy Sandell and tell them to come home right now.
You did not.
Apparently they did. Apparently they no, the sitter had no idea. Apparently they like walked down the aisles with the flashlight saying John or Judy Sandell.
Oh my God.
They eventually found them. My parents rushed home. Was like, what's going on? And my babysitter is mortified. She's like, I had no idea. And it's like, I just got scared. So I didn't watch another horror movie until I was like in my 20s at that point.
Oh my God. My youngest would totally do something like that.
Yeah. When I was in my 20s, then I discovered I actually kind of liked horror movies. I think there was some kind of exposure therapy that I put myself through, because even like that spooky house, when I first moved here and saw, you know, all the decorations, I'd walk by and I would like not want to go down the street. And then eventually I got the courage to walk on the other side of the street by it, because I just didn't want to be scared of it anymore. And now I can like walk up to it and it's fine. It's no longer freaky to me. But for a long time, it was very scary.
Do you ever go back and watch some of those movies from our childhood? I remember them seeming so realistic. And then you go back and watch them now and you're like, this is the silliest, dumbest thing I've ever. Look at these props. Look at this CGI. Sure. This is completely ridiculous.
But I feel like if you're in the headspace, and I think music has a lot to do with this, actually. If you're in the headspace, yeah. I still find all those movies really scary. Anytime that I've tried to watch like one of the Halloween movies or Friday the 13th, you know, they don't hold up necessarily as, well, Halloween maybe, but it doesn't hold up as like quality cinema or, you know, high production values. But I find myself halfway in being a little on edge and being a little nervous. Yeah.
The music, you're right, really does set the mood, which might be a good segue, actually, to what we've chosen for today.
Yeah. Well, let me talk about my choice first, because it's going to go right off of this theme. For my best album for spooky season, I'm choosing John Carpenter's soundtrack to the movie Halloween. One of John Carpenter's first movies, and he's sort of considered the master of horror. And it is genuinely scary. It's a genuinely scary movie all these years later, 30, 40 years later, however long it's been. And the music is all synthesizers. It's kind of lame. Like, it's kind of like, it's not, you know, huge orchestral music that like gets your blood pumping. It's just like very simple melodies on a synthesizer. And my goodness, they're all unsettling. Like, I listen to this soundtrack and I'm immediately like a little creeped out. And so I you know, could talk about the Halloween soundtrack a little bit, although I don't know that I have much to say about it beyond what I've already said. But I'm more interested in having a conversation of, is this music creepy because I associate it with the movie Halloween, or is the music creepy on its own? And I'm curious, do you have an opinion about that?
I think it's safe to say that the music from Halloween is creepy on its own. I think if you hadn't seen the movie Halloween, mm-hmm. and this music started coming on when you're walking down an alleyway and you think you might be seeing zombies, but the lighting's not great and you're they're actually just being thrown away, but you don't know that yet. I think you would be pretty freaked out.
That's true. Like, walking around in the woods at night listening to this on headphones would be unsettling. Like, you would feel less safe than you would not listening to that music, for sure. I think I came into this episode, before I started doing like kind of a deep dive, thinking that it was probably 50-50. Like, there is something unsettling about the music, you know, or maybe it's minor chords or atonal stuff or whatever it is that makes music unsettling. But then I would think that at least 50% of it is I've spent my whole life being unsettled by this music because I associate it with things like Halloween. And so I did a deep dive because I wanted to see, like, what are the albums that people consider to be like the scariest albums of all time? And I think I expected to see a lot of stuff that was similar to the Halloween soundtrack. And instead, there's this whole other genre of music out there that is really intense, just meant to unsettle you, just meant to be like unpleasant to listen to and scary. And so I found a few albums. I don't know that I need to go into detail. I'm also not recommending these. I'm not telling anybody to go out there and find them, but I just was amazed that they exist. There's one called Everywhere at the End of Time by The Caretaker. This is a very long album that's meant to imitate the stages of dementia. And so it's kind of old timey ballroom dancey music, but recorded in that way that kind of makes it sound like it's coming through a phonograph or something.
Yeah.
And it starts to slowly disintegrate. Like, the music as it plays throughout the album starts to slowly disintegrate. Kind of similar to like the the William Basinski records, The Disintegration Loops, if you've ever listened to those.
Yeah.
Where he just listened to one loop of, he played one loop of tape over and over and over again as it was disintegrating, recorded that whole experience. So it's like slowly slowing down and pieces of it are falling away and it's getting more and more warped and cracked. And it's actually quite haunting and beautiful. But this one, there is some of that, but then it's less about that. And it's more about as your memory starts to go, things get more and more terrifying. And the music starts to get more and more intense, or the soundscapes, I guess, start to get more and more intense, to the point where by the end, I'm not sure it's even qualifying as music anymore, but it is deeply, deeply unsettling and did give me this experience of, oh, I think this might be what it feels like to have dementia. And what struck me about this album is that people listen to it. Like, people actually like exposing themselves to this. There's another record I found called Deconstructionist by Giles Corey. And I'm just going to read the description on his website of this record. It says, "This is not a regular album. Please read the description before you decide to buy. Over an hour of music designed to induce trances, possession states, and out-of-body experiences. Not a record, quote-unquote, but a philosophical tool, accompanied by a booklet exploring the why and how in the history of trance, the illusion of self, and why some people commit suicide, ignore stab victims on the street, and have their consciousness shaped by light and sound. Please note, this album must be listened to through headphones. It is highly recommended that you read the accompanying PDF before you listen to the music. If you have epilepsy or a history of mental illness, you may want to speak to a doctor before listening to this album. Some of the recording techniques used in this music have been shown to cause seizures in those susceptible."
Oh my God.
And that all sounds like somebody wrote that so they could sell albums. But the people on these Reddit boards are like, nope, this is legit. Like, this is legit scary. So I just listened to like a couple tracks and that's all I could do. I was like, I'm out. Like, this is so scary. This music, which is, it does feel like music, is so scary that I want nothing to do with it. There's another one called Field Recordings from the Edge of Hell by the Dirty Knobs. And it's all like field recording soundscapes. And it was so terrifying. Like, I couldn't hang for more than a couple minutes. It's like, this is bad for my soul.
Okay. I guess here's my question. One, that makes me also terrified to ever have dementia. But two, I have such a hard time separating movies from the music and the imagery from the music. And so if cinema did not exist, if there were never scary TV, scary movies, and then you heard this music, what would your mind get filled with? Like, would it still get filled with this kind of terrifying imagery? Or have we been conditioned to associate that music with terrifying imagery?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, it's interesting. We were just at the Art Institute. My daughter and I were at the Art Institute a couple weeks ago. She had a day off of school. And that was part of like her birthday present, that we were going to spend a day at the Art Institute. And we were looking at these old Japanese paintings from, you know, centuries ago. And they were pretty terrifying. Like, the imagery in them was pretty terrifying. And that obviously predates, and I feel like you've seen like pictures of like ghost photographs, you know, like people who say there's a ghost in this photo. Those pictures are all from, you know, well before movies and well before,
yeah,
some of
fair.
Them well before, you know, any sort of like this type of storytelling can include media, and the paintings sometimes can be scary. And so I feel like we've always had a sense of what is scary. But you look at gargoyles on cathedrals, or you look at like the masks they wear for something like All Hallows Eve or something, when you know, you look at old stuff. I think that we're generally aware of what is scary. And there are certain things that are just unsettling to us. And I sort of struggle to know how we get there. Is that supernatural? Is that something else? But like, how do we all arrive at the same idea of these things are scary and these things aren't? But it does seem like this is a very, very, very old idea. That doesn't, and I will say something that I found really interesting is when I get really scared by a movie, I do find that muting it helps. Like, I find that muting the sound
100%
pulls me right out of it. And I'm like, I can like kind of be aware of it more, as this is a set with actors and choreography and makeup or whatever. And it's less scary. And when I turn the sound back on, I'm like right back to being like, this is really creepy. So there's something about this music that is like, I'm not just adding to, like, it might actually be the main thing. I don't know. Do people who are deaf not get scared? That doesn't seem possible, but I'm curious how that works.
I think you're right. Like, it could very well be the main thing. And I'm wondering if where we got our sense originally of what is creepy came from actual natural sounds.
Oh, interesting.
Like creepy like in scary nature. Space. So I'm like, yeah, exactly. So yeah. I'm imagining like walking through the woods and it's dark and you're hearing kind of the winds and you've got the like sounds of the animals and you really don't know what's out there. Like I bet there's some in the like entomology of where this kind of creepy music originated from, like how much of it kind of came from the natural world where we were kind of naturally scared of our environments.
It probably meant to be, like it was probably evolutionary that we needed to be scared of our environments. You know, I think about something like the Blair Witch Project. When I first saw the Blair Witch Project, I didn't know it was fake. I mean, I could have guessed that it was fake, but I didn't know it. I saw it in California right when it was being released. There wasn't hype around it yet. And that whole theater was like screaming at certain points of it. And I went back and watched it a couple years ago. And it's all suggestion. There's almost no actual images of terror. It's such a low budget thing that most of the things that are scary are like sounds outside the tent or somebody rustling the tent or running by. And all those things seem terrifying. And so I imagine that's always been true. Like you think you're safe in your little hut or whatever, and then somebody runs by and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Your little hut or whatever.
There was other music I found. There's a whole subgenre of metal music called depressive suicidal black metal. There's an album called I Am a Weapon Against Myself by a band called I'm in a Coffin. Please don't go listen to this band. This is unnecessary for you to check out. And when I listened to it, I thought, these guys are talking about suicide in a descriptive fashion. Like, this is not like an emotional experience. It's really intense. And I thought, this is too scary for me. Like, I'd rather pull back and listen to something like Halloween or, you know, like there's a Boards of Canada album that I love that we can talk about in honorable mentions called Geogatti. That is a little unsettling. You know, I was genuinely frightened by Nine Inch Nails growing up. This is like the type of music now that I would much rather listen to during spooky season than any of these other things that are out there. But it did send me down this rabbit hole of, oh, I think music can actually be really, really scary. And so this idea that the Halloween soundtrack is scary on its own right and its own merits, I think is accurate. And yeah. I would not have guessed that going into this. I would have thought it had much more to do with seeing Michael Myers' face and imagining him, you know, like stalking Jamie Lee Curtis or whatever, than it actually maybe on its own. This music is genuinely unsettling.
That was my assumption too. So it's interesting that we're both kind of landing on the like, no, there's something like inherently terrifying of the music itself.
Yeah.
I thought of Nine Inch Nails as well. They're kind of in my honorable mentions, but not so much. I was thinking about, am I spooked? This is what's tough about the term spooky, because you're right about the like, is this meant to be fun, scary versus kind of genuinely scary? And I kind of landed more on the fun, scary, which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. But even the like, genuine scary, I don't think Nine Inch Nails does that for me. It's more like nihilistic and dark, but not necessarily like in a scary way.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that sounds right. I mean, I think when I was a kid, I was more genuinely scared by it. But now I would probably agree with where you're at.
That's interesting. See, I don't think I was ever scared about Nine Inch Nails, even as a kid. It was more like, I remember going through periods of, I think I told you about this with other bands, where I was just like, who would like this? Who would genuinely choose to listen to this? And then, of course, I got into them later in life when I was like a moody teenager. And I was like, yes, this is perfect.
I mean, some of that had to do with like going to a Catholic school, being raised Catholic, having like heavy Catholicism in my background, and hearing him sing, had like a whole Black Is Your Soul, I'd Rather Die Than Give You Control. I have this sense of, I don't 100% know what he's talking about, but I'm pretty sure what he's talking about is not something my priest would want me to be listening to. And watching the music videos for Closer, you know, or some of their more popular songs were always a little unsettling. I think about like Marilyn Manson. I didn't necessarily find Marilyn Manson pleasurable to listen to, so I didn't spend much time with it. But the music videos were gnarly. Tool's another one. I loved Tool.
Marilyn Manson felt like one of those, I guess, bands, but really person who was genuinely trying to be like horror, at least shock, right? If not scary, trying to scare middle American moms, at least.
There is this interesting thing where people do seek this type of music out or seek these haunted house experiences out, and they do find these experiences fun on some level. Like they're pleasurable on some level, to them. And I have a hard time relating to that. But when I think about spooky season, what's spooky for my wife, who like doesn't even want to see the house, you know, across the block. And what's spooky for me, where I'm like kind of into creature movies, like some horror movies. And then what's spooky for people who are like just inundated. I sometimes have this question of, is it a good thing that I've like desensitized myself to all of these things? Is it, should I, would it yeah, be better 100%. If I was more like Verity and like could just, you know,
had a avoid
all
of it soul.
At all costs? Yeah, have a purity of soul. All right, let's switch and talk about your record.
I chose the 1998 album Hellbilly Deluxe by Rob Zombie. I definitely went the more fun spooky than scary spooky angle. And I think that to me, when I think about spooky, that's kind of inherent to that word. Like spooky to me is like scary, but meant to be fun. Mm. You know what I mean? That I think it has that connotation. So I kind of went that route. And Rob Zombie is this, let's face it, ridiculous artist who takes on this like ridiculous horror persona. Really came into his own, I think, in this album, which was his first solo album. He coming out of the band White Zombie. And this album is actually just ridiculous, kind of industrial metal dance fun. The most well-known song on this album is probably Dragula. A remix of it was on the Matrix soundtrack. You may have heard it there if you were into that soundtrack, which I definitely was. And so that's probably the most well-known song on this album. But that kind of is representative, I think, of the kind of industrial metal electronic vibe of this album, which is more into the electronic elements than the White Zombie albums were. White Zombie were more kind of leaning into the metal side. Right before this album was Astro Creep 2000, which had, I believe, that More Human Than Human banger, which is a song that I was very into. And again, it's just a completely ridiculous song, but it's got that, you know, that sliding guitar metal sound.
The intro of that song has a woman moaning.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate when it comes up on Shuffle when my kids are in the car. I'm like, turn it. Why do you got to include that? That's unnecessary.
That's good. But I just want to like, so for that to me gives it the fun vibe. Like this is something I could definitely see you putting on at a Halloween party, for example.
Yeah.
But listen to these song titles. I mean, Call of the Zombie, Super Beast, Living Dead Girl, Spook Show Baby, How to Make a Monster. I mean, like, if was there an album more built for Halloween? And we're not even talking about the subtitle of this album, which is an amazing Hillbilly Deluxe : 13 cadaverous cavorting inside the Spook Show International.
Love it.
I mean, again, just completely ridiculous, but so much fun. I mean, again, if you're looking for this, which, and this seems like the perfect time you would be looking for this, it's an awesome thing to put on.
I love Living Dead Girl is a great song. He has a few singles that I was really into, and then I would listen to the albums and be like, okay, I got it. Like,
yeah, same. That was exactly.
And then he'd come up with a new single, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And I'm like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how a lot of albums in the 90s were built around singles, and then the rest felt like filler. That was really where White Zombie and most of Rob Zombie's catalog was for me, for sure.
He seems so over the top, and I didn't know how seriously to take him. But now he's like a filmmaker. Like, he makes like real big, you know, decent sized budgeted Halloween movies and stuff like that. He's become a kind of staple of spooky season in America.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when we were talking about, do we like this kind of genre? Do we like being scared? I'm going to go ahead and say Rob Zombie likes it. He's into it.
Rob Zombie, super into field recordings from the edge of hell.
Yeah. My favorite is what a reviewer I was reading called his lyricism, brief psycho nursery rhymes.
Excellent.
I mean, if you look at something like the lyrics of Dragula. I mean, dead I am the light, dig into the skin, knuckle crack the bone, 21 to win. I mean, like, again, makes like just
this has nothing. These are just phrases.
Nonsense. Exactly.
But they have good mouthfeel. They feel real good as you're singing them, screaming in your pickup
exactly.
truck, rolling down the highway at 1,000 miles an hour.
In your Halloween party while you're dressed, you know, like the man in the yellow hat and you're bouncing too.
He definitely set a tone for the idea of what costumes could be like. I felt like he always looked exactly how his band sounded. I was always very impressed.
100%. He was on brand. I was
very impressed by that. And I was into them when they were like kind of just getting started, like Thunder Kiss 65, which is a great song. And they're more of a metal band at that point. They're less of a, you know, freak show, sideshow, kind of all scary all the time. But it was fun kind of watching him adopt this persona of Rob Zombie. What's his actual name?
Rob Zombie was born Robert Bartla Cummings.
Yeah, that's less scary.
No. Yeah. And he's from Massachusetts. I just love when you like look at someone who's adopted such a like scary badass persona and it turns out he's Robert Cummings from Massachusetts. Like,
right,
it's awesome.
Where does this album, does this album sit in your canon at all?
No.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's again, yeah. This feels like an album that has a very specific context that you would want to listen to it in. And Halloween is one of those contexts.
So it's like October 31st is the last day you listen to this record.
I'm probably, yeah. I mean, I think that's probably true of not only all of Rob Zombie's catalog, but probably all of White Zombie's catalog, to be honest. But I do want to just, before we move away from this, talk about his voice. Because again, we've talked about a lot of distinctive voices, and he has got one of those distinctive metal voices that, I mean, I could not imitate if I tried. But I think what is unique about his voice is that he sounds like a metal singer. You know, like when you think about death metal, you think about he sounds like that, only articulate, and I don't know how he does it.
He actually enunciates.
Yes. It's like it, but he sounds like he's being that guttural sound, but you can actually understand what he's saying, and I don't know how he pulls that off.
There's a woman who teaches how to do that type of voice without shredding your vocal cords. So apparently a lot of these metal bands just destroy their throats.
Yeah, totally.
Can never perform again. So she like teaches how to do it in different, I don't know how exactly, but she teaches how to do it in a way that is sustainable over their whole career. And he's got such a, yeah, that kind of gravelly Tom Waits thing going on.
Yeah.
But then he like full throats into the songs. That's pretty cool.
If Tom Waits was part of the Undead, he would be Rob Zombie.
I have to say, I disagree with the idea that More Human Than Human is only played in the month of October. That song is a banger. 365. Christmas Day, More Human Than Human.
Oh man, I haven't listened to that song in so long. I kind of need to put that on now, although I feel like, again, my kids would be like, what are you listening to?
Well, and then you have to get through the moaning, which is so awkward for everybody.
Thank you for reminding me of that, because I'll just skip ahead. I'm just like, cut out the first 30 seconds.
The Halloween soundtrack, also not in my canon. We can just skip the canon right along. But I do have a few honorable mentions. Do you have some honorable mentions?
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about Nine Inch Nails. I obviously thought of the Misfits and some horror punk, but we've talked about that for so much. And I also just think that's more playful. Like, it doesn't feel very Halloween-y to me, even though they really lean into the horror, you know? I mean, Nick Cave murder ballads, I feel like we've talked about, especially if you want to be on theme, it's hard to get away from murder ballads, right? What were some of your honorable mentions?
If you had a word cloud of the types of musics that the type of music that I like, haunting would be very big. That would be a very big word.
That's fair, yeah.
But I don't associate haunting music with spooky season. I would never consider Radiohead, like some of the B-sides from Amnesiac, some of those I might consider on a playlist for spooky season. But I wouldn't necessarily put it on like a Halloween playlist. But there is stuff like, you know, I mentioned Boards of Canada's Giugatti. Another one is Silent Shout by The Knife, and kind of all the Fever Ray and all the Knife albums. I listen to them and I feel a little unpleasant, but I like it. It's really good music. It's melodic. It's often beautiful. It's occasionally fun, but they are definitely aiming at something a little darker and a little more twisted than the music that I normally listen to. So The Knife, Silent Shout. And I would probably, if I had to pick a Nine Inch Nails record, I might pick The Fragile for like spooky season.
Mm. We talked about this before, but I feel like if you had to pick a song that is the right song for this genre, I still feel like you got to pick Red Right Hand.
Take a little walk to the edge of the town and go across the track.
Nick Cave's Red Right Hand is the quintessential spooky season song.
Right? Because it hits just that exact, like, spooky but also fun and playful vibe.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, if I don't find the rest of that album to be that same vibe, and so I wouldn't have picked it tonight, but as a song on a playlist, you can't go wrong.
Right.
All right, man. What are you listening to this week?
Oh, man. I am disturbingly behind on new music. There are so many albums that have come out recently that I am really excited to listen to and that I haven't been able to yet.
Yeah.
Including there's a new album by Lorraine called I Killed Your Dog that's supposed to be really good. A rock album by Big Head called The Worst Is Yet to Come. I'm just naming things I haven't listened to, which is not a good way to do this. Even the album Crosses, the new album from Crosses, which I've been really looking forward to, I haven't been able to get to that, or the new Jamila Woods. Instead, I have been stuck on this, speaking of haunting, Sufjan album, Javelin. Mm-hmm. Like, I keep going back to it. It's both a great fall album, and it is just maybe my favorite thing he's done in years.
I will always love you, but I cannot.
But yeah, still been loving this Sufjan album. I just need to like create time to listen to all the other great music that has come out. It's been such a chaotic few weeks.
Similarly to you, I have just been listening to Javelin. I assumed you were going to pick Javelin today as your record, and so I picked something else. But when we get to our end of the year list, it's going to be very, very, very high. I think it might.
Yeah.
I mean, I always overreact to music when I say it's my favorite thing he's done. The thing I really like about it and appreciate about it is that it's kind of returned to the singer-songwriter part of Sufjan that I most enjoy. And I like his experimental stuff, but I most enjoy when he's in singer-songwriter mode. But there are like flourishes of orchestration here, and there are yep. kind of Sufjan-y things going on in this album that elevate it. And yeah, it doesn't feel like Carrie and Lowell Part 2. Like, it doesn't feel like it's all
no, it really doesn't.
All time. You know, it's not Seven Swans, but it's also not Illinois, where it's, you know, this
very
huge,
orchestrated, like very yeah, exactly
and arranged. But it has moments of that, and so I find it very satisfying to listen to, and have returned to it many times. Also, the stories that have come out about it, you know, kind of the history of why he made the record. And then also yeah. his current illness, like, it all feels so tragic.
Yeah, it's got like this amazing emotional resonance with both the yeah. lyricism and the stories behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But speaking of, my pick for the week is I Killed Your Dog by Lorraine.
Awesome.
Definitely give a spin.
Tell me about it. How are you liking it?
Despite the weird title. So I really love Lorraine. Lorraine has been an artist that I've enjoyed in the past as well and have had high on your end lists. This one is this really fun combination of like dark and playful. There is part of it that
already.
Gets real haunting and part of it that gets real moody and maybe mysterious. And then there's also this part of it that is funky and fun and maybe a little upbeat at times. It's a really beautiful album. I've only listened to it a couple of times, but I'm going to go back in right away because I am really responding to this one. And again, think it's going to be high up on my end of the year list. So big recommendation for Lorraine's I Killed Your Dog.
Can I just be honest that our end of year lists are already stressing me out? Like, I'm already having that like end of year anxiety about what have I not listened to enough? Do you know what I mean? What did I not give enough of a chance? What did I forget to listen to? There's so many things I'll drop in my library and forget to go back to.
Yeah, I have a playlist called 2023 that has so many albums at this point that I'm not going to get to all of them. And I'm allowing that to be okay. There's like a few things that I really want to spend more time with. This album called Ghosts by Hania Rainey. I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, but it's kind of in this Kid A haunting. I mean, it's mostly piano and electronic music, but it's really beautiful. And I've listened to it once. And I would probably, after that one time, put it pretty high on my list, but I can't do that. I can't put something that I've only listened to once.
That's what I'm saying.
So even the stuff that I love, there's a new Jamila Woods album that I'm never going to get to. And I really want to. I love Jamila Woods.
Yeah, I've loved every single that has come out from that album, and I haven't gotten to the whole album yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what I want our listeners to hear is that we have a really hard job on your behalf. Like, being an amateur music critic is very hard, but I hope that you all appreciate our efforts for you.
What makes it hard is the amateur part. It's the part where we have jobs we have to do. We
can't the part just where to we're music not all actually day. Getting paid at all for this.
I've stopped watching TV and I'm just listening to music, and that's great. It's been wonderful. But it's
that's good for your health. It's good for your health until you start putting on spooky Halloween albums and freaking yourself out alone.
Well, it happened one night and then I was done. And I even regretted it a little bit. It was pretty late at night. The house, we have all of our lights on, like they're kind of smart lights. Some of them are on timers.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they like switched off at one point and it's like, oh, I'm in the dark listening to this really terrifying music. Get me out of here. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again this week. We will see you next week with more Best Album 4 picks. Send us your pick for Best Album for Spooky Season. Let us know if you've actually listened to any of these really intense, dark things that we did not recommend.
Yeah, if you got through the whole thing, we'll give you a shout out.
I must say it again. We are not recommending them. They're not getting our stamp of approval as something you should check out. I just think it's interesting that they exist.
It's interesting that they exist. Oh, that's so good.
All right, I'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.